Good evening, everybody. While the last few people are finding their seats, if you own a black sport Range Rover, you've left your lights on. So you may want to just go and turn those off. It's just out there. Good evening. My name is Claire O'Donoghue, and I'm a member of the church family here. And it's my very great pleasure to welcome you to our annual Christmas is Coming event. Before we do anything else, I think we must thank a few people who have helped make this evening happen. The stallholders, thank you very, very much for the most beautiful stalls. It's taken a lot of work to set them up, so thank you all very much for coming along. There was a team from the church staff who are in here working so hard today, decorating the church and setting out the chairs, so we are very grateful to them as well. The men who are now, I hope, in the kitchen washing up, who've been serving our canapes and our drinks, thank you very much indeed. There's been a group of people making all the food this afternoon, and then a small committee who don't want to be named, but who have been working really hard organising this whole event. So thank you all very, very much. I love this event for all sorts of reasons, partly because it's the first Christmas event of the year, which makes it very special, but also because I think it holds in balance all that is good about Christmas. Friends here together, delicious food and drinks, opportunities to buy gifts for loved ones, but also a bit of time to stop and to think about the reason for the giving and for the celebrations, the birth of the Lord Jesus. And it's a great pleasure to introduce to you Charlie Screen, who has agreed to come and speak to us this year. Charlie is the Associate Rector here at St. Helens. He's married to Claire, and they have two boys, Tom, who is 6, and Edward, who is 4. I've got that right.
That is entirely right.
Thank you, Charlie. Now, Charlie, age 6 and 4, that is, I think, probably the most exciting age to be at Christmas time, isn't it? Christmas is just fantastic. What is the mood like in your home at the moment?
It is a lot of fun. There is competitive advent calendar stuff. There is, I think, did we buy it here? There is a candle on the breakfast table that is pretty dangerous when the 4-year-old is trying to light it every day to count the time down. And blowing it out is pretty difficult as well. There is quite a lot of aggressive, that is what my present is going to be, though there are about 20 things that has been so far. So yeah, it's a lot of fun.
Brilliant. And what is on your Christmas list this year, Charlie?
My Christmas, so Claire, my, it's very dull for her. I do a lot of kayaking, and there's a lot of specialist, geeky, kind of horrible plastic things that you need to do that with. So there's quite a long list of things that are only happy in muddy water.
So nothing here that Claire could possibly purchase.
Well, I was hoping there would be a stall of wetsuits and that sort of thing, but maybe it's just around
next
the corner.
Year. Next year. Maybe you could run it for us next year, Charlie. Put a wig on and come along again. That would be good. Now, I know you do a lot of kayaking. What has been your most kind of adventurous or dangerous trip that you've done?
Yeah, again, so Claire is very patient with me. My most recent thing I did was paddled from Northern Ireland to Scotland and back. Which is quite, it's not actually very far. It sounds like a long way, doesn't it? It's not actually very far. The Coast Guard did tell me not to once, but then let me the next time. And that was quite fun.
Was that not cold and quite
rough? No, it was too hot. It was sunny.
Yeah. Okay, and do you do any kayaking in London?
Yeah, and again, so if any of you live near the river, you may have seen the very strange people who are out on the river at night, normally on Tuesday evenings. And that's me. Kayaking through down the Thames. Next week we have our Christmas paddle, so dressed up as Santa, up to Tower Bridge where we'll land and drink mulled wine and sing carols. It's very strange, really.
Have you planned your costume?
Yeah, I have.
What's it like exactly?
Well, I found a deer's head on a beach, and so I have this kind of scary Christmas Rudolph with a light-up nose that he's going to be on the boat.
Oh, I thought you were going to hold it out.
No, not for me. No.
Oh, good.
No, not on my head. Sorry, that's on the boat. Yeah.
Will it not tip in? Will
you? No. And I shouldn't puncture other people too much. So, yeah.
Phew, that's good. Now, rewinding a little bit, what was Christmas like for you when you were growing up?
Yeah, so Christmas, lots of fun. The thing it might be useful to know about me is that my Christmas and my life was always weirdly religious. So my mum is a Roman Catholic. My dad was a Church of England vicar, and they took it seriously in a sort of, we're not going to do one or the other. we're going to do both. Christmas meant, deep in the middle of the night, two services probably, then up again early in the morning, every kind of... By the time I was 10, I'd been to church 2,000 times, I think. So a lot of church. So Christmas was always very religious, always fun and lots of family, but always very, very religious.
There we are. Your boys better not complain about going to church
too
much.
They have it so easy.
Exactly. In my day. Yeah. Charlie, you're now the associate rector here at St Helens. What is the best bit of your job?
Yeah, so the main group of people I interact with are students. I've seen some students here this evening. It's great that you're here. And I think the most fun, exciting bit of that is that those who are 18 now, students now, are a generation who have never read the Bible at all, never kind of interacted with... They know about Christian things, but they never interacted with what Jesus really said and did. Whereas I think my generation, there was quite a lot of boring Christianity to kind of try and shake off, certainly if you went to church as much as I did. Whereas students will say, how interesting, I've no idea what Jesus did and said. Please, would you tell me? Or can we look at it together? And that is lots of fun.
Brilliant. Well, that's exactly what you are going to do for us tonight. Yeah. And if you have got your bag inside, you'll find a John's Gospel. And we're going to have a reading from that. If you want to follow along, do. Don't feel you have to. It's page 3. That's a lot of rustling, isn't it? That really is. So what's going to happen now? If you want to read along, it's on page 3, and Felicity is going to come and read us that page, and then Charlie will come and explain it a little bit to us. Felicity.
So page 3. In the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. He was in the beginning with God. All things were made through him, and without him was not anything made that was made. In him was life, and the life was the light of men. The light shines in the darkness, and the darkness has not overcome it. There was a man sent from God whose name was John. He came as a witness to bear witness about the light, that all might believe through him. He was not the light, but came to bear witness about the light. The true light, which enlightens everyone, was coming into the world. He was in the world, and the world was made through him, yet the world did not know him. He came to his own, and his own people did not receive him. But to all who did receive him, who believed in his name, he gave the right to become children of God, who were born not of blood, nor of the will of the flesh, nor of the will of man, but of God. And the Word became flesh and dwelt among us, and we have seen his glory, glory as of the only Son from the Father, full of grace and truth. John bore witness about him and cried out, "This was he of whom I said, 'He who comes after me ranks before me because he was before me.' And from his fullness we have all received grace upon grace. For the law was given through Moses, grace and truth came through Jesus Christ. No one has ever seen God. The only God who is at the Father's side, he has made him known."
Felicity, thank you very much. And thank you for inviting me here. Happy Christmas, if that isn't too ridiculous a thing to say, on the 2nd of December. I've had a fantastic evening so far, and I am very conscious of the honour that the shopping would stop while we could look at these verses that Felicity read together. And on an evening when I guess several people have finished their Christmas shopping in a way that fills me with fear, I thought it might be good to put God's Christmas present to the world on the table, if you like. Our reading is perhaps the most Christmassy reading in the Bible. Even though it doesn't tell the story of Jesus' birth, it instead thinks about what it was that God gave the world. But we need to acknowledge Christmas presents are tricky, aren't they? They are tricky for the giver. In a week's time, I am going back into my son's school for my moment of greatest popularity in my life. I went previously, and last time they queued for the chance to speak to me. The entire school cancelled lessons for my visit. Even the dinner ladies queued up to meet me. I heard people say they were too scared to speak to me. And one girl said that she loved me. Except, of course, she didn't say, I love Charlie. She said, I love Santa. And in my son's school, in a week's time, I'm going in again to be Father Christmas. Ho, ho, ho. And it isn't all kind of fun and laughs. The North Pole clothes inside a superheated primary school broom cupboard. The beard itches at your chin and drags at your ears. And too late, you wonder if anybody has washed it since last year. And also, I wasn't entirely successful at being Santa. Who would have thought that six-year-olds could be so cynical? Are you real? Was one of them. My favourite criticism, though, was you're not fat enough to be Santa, which I was quite happy with. That was good. But rather more fatally, they also said last year's presents were better. Which is pretty bad, isn't it? So Christmas presents are tricky. They're tricky for the giver, even if you're Father Christmas. They're also tricky for the receiver. My family is generally of the sort of no clues variety, which means the season for Christmas presents is also the season for amazing social skills. So on Christmas Day, you open a present aware that it could be anything. And you have, I don't know, 2 seconds to react and say, this is just what I wanted. This is absolutely it. So there you go. You open it up and say, I really wanted a scarf. That's such a good thing. I'm so glad it's not socks because I hate socks. Oh, it is socks. But it's just very long and colourful socks. But that's fine because what I really hate is short socks. I've got far too many shorts. Oh, auntie, but that the package under the tree, that soft pack, is that socks? That's exactly what I wanted as well. And it's very stressful, isn't it, really, Christmas? So our reading, it's on page 3, the first real page of these books. It presents God's Christmas present to the world. And it starts, I don't know if you heard as Felicity read, it starts like a beautiful reflection on reality. God's present is wrapped in the brightest ideas in Greek philosophy and the deepest teachings in the Hebrew scriptures. But still, even for God, Christmas presents are tricky. Tricky for the giver and tricky for the receiver. And we're going to follow through the normal 3 stages of opening a present this evening. So can you imagine the representatives of the human race unwrapping God's present? Oh, God, you've given us a baby. Thank you. So first key stage is going to be, what is it? That's verse 14. Second key stage is, how do you feel? And the third key stage is going to be, what do you do with it? In verse 12. And I just want to put that on the table, if you like, and turn it over a bit and ask us how we react to God's present. And unlike my family, there is no point lying to God. If you don't like this present, you'd be best off saying so. But please don't think he's disinterested. This present needs a reaction. So look at verse 14 first. And let's see what this baby is. It says that he is the Word, which taps off all of the deep philosophy in verses 1 to 5, that the Word is as old as God. He is equal with God. He made the universe, and that is, that's quite something to say at a craft fair, isn't it? I don't know what you made. I made nothing. God made everything. The Word made everything. Reason and logic and wisdom in a person. And verse 14 says, the Word became flesh and dwelt among us, and we have seen his glory. So God became flesh, became a human being, became visible. And there is the primary interaction in the Bible with atheism and with agnosticism. Verse 18 acknowledges just how significant those questions are. It says, no one has ever seen God. It's hard to believe in someone you cannot see. But now the verse continues, the only God who is at the Father's side, so this word character, he has made him known. So if you aren't sure whether God exists, well, John claims that God has done all the hard work. He's become physical and visible and observable. He was seen. A demonstration to examine, just like any other historical event. And John spends the rest of his short book developing that. If you've got questions about whether God is real, please keep John's gospel and read through it and see what John would say. John will say, I saw him. I saw him do all these things. But more than that, verse 14 wants us to think about the present from God's perspective. Think about how extraordinary it is. The word became flesh. Flesh is a deliberately provocative, debasing word. The original Jewish readers would have churned their stomachs at verse 14. It's the same kind of reaction they got in the antenatal classes when they showed all the dads that video. There are three people here who were in the room that day in ours. God covered in afterbirth. God as a baby. And maybe we know the story of Christmas too well to feel the shock of it. But even then, we like babies, don't we? We think, why wouldn't God want to become a baby? Babies eat and sleep and they look sweet some of the time, maybe when they're asleep. But to see Christmas from God's point of view, we need to think about what it would mean for him to become a baby. When I was six, I did what I think was my finest piece of creative writing. I think it has been basically all downhill since then. And I wrote the story of the day that I became an ant. Pretty imaginative. My mum had been trying to poison all the local ants, and I imagined I became an ant to explain it all to them and rescue them. It's pretty silly, but that's how it goes. I thought it would be fun then. I think you're going to have six legs and antlers, and it'd be a bit gross, and it'd be sort of fun. But imagine it in reality. Imagine swapping being a human being to become an ant. I don't know how into animal rescue you are, but you would need to be pretty committed to become an ant. God became a human on a rescue mission. And to see the nice scene in the manger, even halfway right, you need to imagine Mary and Joseph and the shepherds as bugs, and you and me there with our antennae to get the picture. And actually, though, we're still then miles from what God really did, what Jesus really did. See, in my six-year-old story, I saved the anthill. I'm slightly nervous about this. I want to tell you the final scene. I'm aware of some people in the room with a background in psychiatry, and you may see them talking to me afterwards. Because the final scene is of me, the heroic ant, sinking my ant pincers into the unprotected flesh of the underneath of my mum's foot. And saving the anthill. It's slightly weird, isn't it? I don't know what that means. But in my head, it did the trick. The hill was saved, and I was the hero. God became a human being. But Jesus didn't have a hero's role. Christmas is one of those events that includes the sequel. See, on Christmas Day, and I speak with authority, having been to so many church services as a 10-year-old, Christians meet not really to remember the birth of a baby, though it is that. On Christmas Day, all around the world, Christians meet and they take bread and wine. So wine to represent blood and broken bread to represent a broken body. On Christmas Day, we meet and act out what the baby did 33 years later. Because Jesus doesn't address all of our human problems by charging in and kicking them in the head or whatever. He quietly takes responsibility for them. He says, all of the guilt for all of that is mine. And he dies on a cross and says, that is the punishment for all of it too. Don't know, would you become an ant to save an anthill? I imagine I would as a six-year-old. Would you become an ant and give your life to save the bugs? I didn't even begin to imagine doing that. And John's claim is that is God's present to us. But second key stage is how do you feel about that present? And I want us just for a second to see the challenge behind a present like that. I don't know if you ever get Christmas presents like that. What you need rather than what you thought you wanted. One year I made the mistake of not writing to thank my aunt for her Christmas present. And like the sweet neo-Victorian that she was, next year she gave me writing paper as what I need. She really did. Just a little tip if you want to do that as well. God's present is hugely, hugely generous. God became flesh and Jesus died. But it is also his idea of what we need. And that is the challenge of Christmas. You need this. Whether or not you think you need rescuing by God will completely determine how you feel about this present, won't it? You may feel this is a Christmas present for bad people that somehow has ended up with my name on it. Because most of us feel like good people when we think about ourselves. Do you know, when I was being Santa, I asked about 100 children, are you good? Have you been good this year? It's just on the script, isn't it? It's one of the questions you have to ask. And even though I could hear what was happening in the queue, you know, get to the back, stop doing that. One little boy said that the girl next to him had bitten his back in the queue as a way of trying to get a larger present. Despite a normal school day, only one girl in the entire school said no when I said, have you been good this year? And I wanted to step out of role and thank her and, I don't know, give her loads of, like, you should have the best present. Because I know it's part of the script and I know they're only six, but the trouble is, all of us adults, we spend a lot of our time, despite the mess that lots of us make of our public lives, we still lie to ourselves about the state of our hearts. And I think religious people, like the child that I was, do this particularly hard. We invest particularly in pretending to be one of the good people. So we say, oh, I'm not perfect, but there's nothing particularly wrong. And God's present to the world feels like, I don't know, feels like you asked for a gym subscription to keep off the Christmas bulge and somebody gave you an emergency appointment for liposuction and a stomach staple. I think, well, thank you very much. I didn't think there was that much of a problem. God says that I, religious child, professional Christian, need this dramatic rescue just as much as anybody else. So we said at the beginning, presents are tricky for the giver and the receiver. Well, now let's look at the third key stage, last one. Just look down at verse 12, which is about what you should do with a present like this. It says, to all who did receive him, who believed in his name, he gave the right to become children of God. See, the right thing to do with it is the same right thing with any other great Christmas present, is to receive it, which here means believe in the name of Jesus, which could be as simple as just saying quietly to God that you do think you need this present. You need Jesus, and you want him to take responsibility for the things that you've done wrong
and want to be rescued by him. And if you do that, the verse here says that you become God's child. In fact, you get the right to be called God's child, the right to be family with God and family with Jesus. Which is quite a big idea, isn't it? Family is a big thing at Christmas, isn't it? And all of us have happy stories and sad stories of family, and stupid things express family closest, don't they? My brother is 13 years older than me and very different in lots of ways. By the time I was writing stupid stories about ants, he was 6 foot tall in the army and playing rugby for the regimental rugby team. And I end up as a clergyman and a 10-stone weakling. But we are unassailably family. And just stupid things express that. I bought a new suit when I came to London. I needed one. I'd last bought one for £10 10 years before that. So I spent a long time trawling around shops in London trying to get one. And one day I'm standing next to my brother in his new suit as well. And completely independently, different shop, different time, different jobs, different needs, we had bought exactly the same suit. Some slight differences. He looks the way that prop forwards look in their 50s now, but it was the same make of suit, if you understand. And we both just liked it and bought it, part fluke and part family. Just a stupid thing that expresses how close we are. And I'm not saying that believing in Jesus has anything to do with dress sense, but it is an offer to have the right to be God's child, Jesus's sister or brother. And I want us to feel the incredible wonder of what Christmas is really all about. Feeling like family, feeling like we belong to each other. This is John's offer, John's point, a real offer, a real family. God is offering human beings, despite the kind of step down to an ant nature of it, the right to be in his family and be his children. And I could talk for hours more about that. I'm not going to. But it is a real offer made by a God with no illusions about us, who wants to adopt us. It's made possible because Jesus became flesh and died. And that is a very serious offer and a very amazing Christmas present. And please, can I just suggest as we finish that you respond seriously too. I know that Claire and the people who've organised this evening would love to recommend that you try reading John's Gospel. Maybe, like the students I meet, it's a long time since you last looked at the life of Jesus and him as a real person and the things he said and did. Maybe one way we could recommend would be to meet up with a friend, just the two of you, and read through John's Gospel together and see what you each make of it, see whether this is true. I find that I need to come back regularly to receive this Christmas present. Say, actually, Jesus, I believe you did that for me, and I want to be your child. I take the challenge of it. I need this, but I do want to be your child. It's the most unimaginably generous gift ever. But presents, we said, are tricky for the giver and for the receiver. So now that we've unwrapped the present, I wonder how you react to it. Thank you very much for listening. I'm going to hand back over to Claire.
Charlie, thank you very, very much indeed. It is wonderful news, isn't it, that we can be part of God's family through Jesus. And as Charlie said, we would really love to encourage you to take away this John's Gospel and read it over Christmas. Or maybe meet up with a friend who is a Christian and read it. I've done that with friends who, some would call themselves Christians, some wouldn't call themselves Christians. And it has been really valued by all of us as an opportunity to sit down and just to chat these things through a little bit more with a friend. If you want a few more ideas as to what you might, how you might read John's Gospel or what you might do, Elspeth is sitting at the back with different resources and ideas. So do go and have a word with Elspeth. Otherwise, please do stay and chat for longer. The stores will reopen for about another 45 minutes or so. Charlie will be around and very happy to answer any questions at all. There will be pudding, nibbles brought round to you where you sit, so please don't feel you have to jump up straight away. And if you'd like coffee, it's available over there. Otherwise, just thank you again very much for coming, and have a very, very happy Christmas.